Thanks a lot. Thanks to everyone, particularly Ethan, for organizing this. This comes from a project that is out with Readers currently, which is called France, Sex, and Arab Men, quotation marks, 1962 to 1979. But it's also an effort to kind of speak to some of the really exciting work on Catholicism, social Catholics in particular, in the post-World War II and larger 20th century. And it's focused on a guy named Jean Céleste. And I won't talk about him. His wife is named Jean Céleste. Jean et Jean play a key role, but I'm going to barely talk about him. Between 1962 and 1979, endless debates about prostitution in France advanced claims and fabricated histories about French relationships with Algeria and more broadly North Africa. These almost always positioned both French men and women in relationship to male North Africans and depicted the Maghreb as a wholly male-dominated space. In both cases, this masculinity appeared as aberrant. These claims worked insistently to discipline and chastise French failures to reject such deviance, and detailed the ways that weak French men and out-of-control French females, girls and women, made this possible. In the 1960s and 70s, numerous public discussions, on the one hand, targeted the promiscuous sexual needs of French men, which led them in such large numbers to prostitutes, and the moral relativism of French society, which winked at such activity, both defined as bolstering France's mortal enemies. So that's more the 60s, 50s, 60s. Deviant sex, frequenting prostitutes, was tied to trafficking with the Algerian enemy, and I'll explain this a bit more. On the other hand, claims about the supposedly insatiable lusts of Maghrebi men now living in France, so particularly the late 60s and 70s, as immigrant workers, and their need for prostitutes revealed the dangerous game France was playing in allowing such people on its soil. Multiple campaigns throughout the 1970s saw various French politicians frame their attempts to, quote, reopen the houses of prostitution, end quote, as a necessary tool to master the supposed threat posed by male Maghrebi lust. One anti-prostitution pamphlet summarized this argument rather bluntly, quote, foreign workers must have access to French women, or all the good girls will be raped, end quote. So they're critical of this argument. The Traité Blanche linked or synthesized these two set sources of fear and loathing as stories that focused on white women reportedly sent to North Africa and Arabia, usually by Arab traffickers, foregrounded fears and claims about male sexuality and male failures between France and Algeria, Europe and North Africa. Now, one key factor that repositioned all these post-1945 French and other French post-1945 French discussions about prostitution in France was the so-called Marc-Michaud Law of 13 April 1946, which banned houses of prostitution or maisons closes, maisons de tolérance. This altered France's regulationist system of prostitution, so well described by historian Alain Corbin in his French 1978 book, which in English, Women for Hire, Prostitution and Sexuality in France After 1850. So note the date, 78, I'll return to that. A companion law of April 1946 reinstituted the social and sanitary registry of prostitutes that had previously been anchored in the maison. Okay, so a different form of regulationism took shape, which still allowed the police both to identify prostitutes, either through a declaration by an individual or without her or his consent, and to require all of these then registered prostitutes to submit to regular examinations for venereal diseases. Now, this new form of regulationism came to an end in July 1960 in a convention, an international convention was finally inserted into a broader French law on the fight against certain social plagues, which targeted alcoholism and, through an amendment, homosexuality, alongside prostitution and proxenetism. These dates, 1946, 1960, map rather nicely onto a history of French decolonization. Yet far more than dates link the post-1945 French history of prostitution and those of empire, decolonization, and particularly Algeria. Although the historians of both questions have paid this little attention, the intersections between them continue to matter quite a lot, at least for the late 1970s. The government, it's worth noting, did not apply the Loi Marc-Richard, but in Algeria or other French overseas territories. And this fact emerged often in post-1962 debates about prostitution. From 1946 to 1962, it also drew much criticism from those fighting to abolish prostitution, the so-called abolitionists. people who had spearheaded the campaign to end regulationism as a first step towards getting rid of prostitution more broadly. Abolitionists and the many press accounts that relayed their concerns and claims talked much of links between Algeria and North Africa and French prostitution. What such critics never said, however, is what evidence from the period makes clear. In these years, complications linked to the end of empire were tightly linked with official hesitations about ending regulationism overseas and in the metropole. And I'm not going to really talk too much about that, however. As soon as the Algerian War Revolution began, 1954, all sides sought to tar opponents with links to prostitution. French propagandists notably linked their enemies to prostitution. In mid-20th century discussions among European French citizens in Algeria, arguments that Algerians, so-called Arabs, Berbers, Muslims, were particularly tolerant of prostitution, or at least had a long tradition of accepting it, held great currency. Among the few who argued the opposite were the small number of anti-prostitution abolitionists, led by the social Catholic, left social Catholic, Jean Sadès. Although he went as far as to claim that, quote, in Kabylie, there is no such thing as prostitution, end quote, his usual argument was that Islam banned the practice. He often referred to a letter he received in 1951 from the Grand Mufti of Alger, which read, quote, for us Mohammedans, prostitution is one of the gravest sins, end quote. This was part of a broader argument that French disregard for this supposedly central tenet of Islam largely explained widespread Algerian resentment of French rule. So it was because of French acceptance and regulationism around prostitution that Algerians were so upset with France. Otherwise, things were good. Sellis frequently evoked the ways that the continued tolerance of organized prostitution in Algeria betrayed French republicanism, which undermined French rule. Over the course of the war, abolitionists repeatedly targeted the ongoing toleration of the Maison to criticize French rule in Algeria. As a journalist in Le Monde wrote in 1957, quote, these houses of pleasure, we know, have not been shut down in Algeria, end quote. She put the blame on racism, on those who deploy racist arguments, quote, the African temperament can be invoked to justify almost anything, end quote, and those who benefited from this racism, quote, most notably the continued existence of Maison reserved for Europeans only, end quote. Pro-French propaganda regularly sought to explain the role prostitution played in the very existence of the FLN. So this is the first of these points I talked about. Unlike Sellis and his allies, they described its causal role as empowering immoral violent men rather than producing humiliation and rage among Muslims. Okay, so it's because of prostitution that they were driven to attack the French, not because they wanted to have prostitution and they were immoral. A weightier, or at least more durable charge, claimed that Algerian pimps operating on the French mainland, the metropole, had financed, in large part, the FLN struggle, the National Liberation Front struggle. This accusation appears first to have emerged in 1957 in the pages of a far-right magazine, Rivarol, it's recently in the news, as another far-right magazine summarized this discovery, quote, the FLN has built up its war treasury through simply taking charge of the prostitution business by eliminating French pimps. Except for a few holdouts, our guys have been pushed aside, end quote. It was in September 1959 that the link between Parisian prostitution and the FLN reemerged in wider public discussion beyond the confines of the far right. The new deputy, Jean-Marie Le Pen, had made this one of his key combats within parliament. It did through the efforts of Jean Sadès. Now, Sadès was the founder of an anti-Vichy resistance movement. He was a co-founder of Combat Outre-mer. He'd come to Algeria in the 30s to work for the Chambre de Commerce. He became a counselor of the Assembly of the French Union, representing Algeria in 1951-1952. He was someone who protested actively against torture during the war, had written complaints to the French government about what they were doing to Algerian prisoners. And his work had been inspired in general by left Catholicism, and particularly inspired by the work of Marc Seignier. He'd worked closely with the scholar Louis Massignon in a group they had founded and presided, the Christian Committee for Understanding France-Islam, and other initiatives for Islamo-Christian understanding. The engagement that defined his later life, and which had already emerged as a central concern by the late 1930s, was the fight to eliminate prostitution. So it was one of a whole set of different struggles he was waging, but this became, you know, would become central. Sellis wrote to Le Monde in 1959 in the name of another organization that he had founded in 1956, Équipe d'Action contre la traite des femmes et des enfants. Okay, so I'll let you His op-ed followed the interpretation offered by Rivarol. It was written, quote, in the wake of the shooting in the Châtelet neighborhood of Paris, which caused the death of one and injured six others, including a Moroccan prostitute, quote, and tellingly titled Against the White Slave Trade, Contre la Traite des Blanches. Sellers, quote, reminded readers that in Paris and in the provinces, gangs and pimps exploit prostitutes either for their own pockets or to finance the rebellion, end quote. This turn to claims developed on the far right would prove determinant. Over the course of the 1960s and 1970s, as he and those around him focused on the crusade to abolish prostitution in France and the world, Sellès, along with other left social Catholic abolitionists, most of them deeply anchored in other left Catholic groups as well, played probably a greater role in nurturing and expanding vicious and racist French stereotypes about North African men than anyone not directly involved in far-right politics. So that's my little contribution, the discussion of kind of social Catholicism in the post-war period, and I'll return to that. Existing histories of the Traite in France, notably of its political and cultural resonance, have focused almost exclusively either on the period before 1947 or on more recent debates since the 1990s around sexual trafficking. In sociologist Liliane Mathieu's analysis, quote, beginning in the 1960s, the model of the Traite largely disappeared from public discussions. We could talk about, I won't today, about Edgar Morin's La Rumeur d'Orléans, but yet in fact, between the late 1940s and late 1970s, French journalists, politicians, and even scholars had much to say about the topic. This was the very propitious contact in which Alain Corbin's magisterial study, Les Filles de Noce, appeared, a history of 19th century France that investigated the intersection, as its French subtitle put, of prostitution, the world's oldest profession, supposedly, and sexual misery, a very 1970s concept in French debates. From the late 19th and middle of the 20th century, as Corbin first demonstrated, the Traite, which had often been linked to Jews, as well as Eastern Europeans, and in broad terms, Mediterraneans. Since the early 1990s, French discussions have focused heavily on Eastern Europe and sub-Saharan Africa. Between the late 1940s and the 1970s, however, Arabs, North Africa, and or Islam were almost always close to the heart of such French discussions. As historian Susan Klein argues, quote, whereas narratives from earlier decades stereotyped traffickers as Jews, during the Algerian War and the years following, they were more often imagined as North Africans, end quote. Now, when Algeria won independence in 1962, the idea that Algeria and Algerians caused the Traite in France almost immediately took on new life. A flurry of articles in the tabloid press in fall 1962 and early 1963 regularly exposed the scary phenomena that threatened French women and French borders. A six-part series in the daily Paris Jour, for example, detailed a phenomenon it termed women for sale, the traffic of shame. If Algeria was the destination most often given in this series as well as elsewhere, it was Algerian men in France who managed to get French women to go. The French traffickers in this journalist's telling were small time. Quote, they have one girl, two girls, maybe three. Any more is rare. They run shops, not factories, above all the Algerians, end quote. One of his key sources was a young woman who worked for the organization that Jean Sellès had founded, Les Equipes d'Action. All of the traffickers she mentioned in her discussions with him were North Africans. She also told the story of a young woman from Montpellier. She let herself be seduced by a North African who then forced her into prostitution, end quote. Each time the young woman sought to escape from her pimp, quote, she got caught by one of those Algerians who, paid by pimps, hang out in the bad end of town, end quote. The final article then in this six-part series, This Is Why Hope Springs Eternal, focused on the role of the young abolitionist and how her organization and others helped French prostitutes escape from La Traite. It marked a clear shift from the first article, which had appeared 1 week before, which told a quite different story. Yet, quote, yet it bears repeating, the trade in white women doesn't exist, as I was told recently by Monsieur Sicot, Secretary General of Interpol. End quote. The journalist took him seriously, noting that in one sense he's right. They do not kidnap little girls who are walking out of their first communion. High schoolers can safely walk about Paris. End quote. In large capital letters, the first article led its readers to believe something that the final article, with its Algerians who paid by pimps hang out in the bad end of town, end quote, aimed to make them forget. That is, from this first article, its headline, quote, all women involved in prostitution have, as a matter of fact, consented to do so, end quote. Over the course of 1 week of articles, the series thus shifted its claims. It did so as it moved from a focus on police statistics and longstanding police averred realities to an investigation of recent phenomena provoked by Algerian independence. In 1966, Céleste would respond to a question from another investigative journalist, the question, but does the white slaves trade still exist? End quote, with clarity. Quote, there is no reason to even ask that question, since every year several thousand women disappear so they can be sent into prostitution, end quote. He also systematically linked it to North Africans in France or across the Mediterranean. Here, as so often in subsequent years, he cited a 1963 article that had appeared in the right-wing newspaper L'Aurore, and reported that, quote, 80% of the total trade is the percentage of women sent to North Africa, end quote. He failed to note that he himself, as the article made clear, was the source of that statistic. These supposedly recounted efforts then, the facts and anecdotes in that article that he then returned to as authoritative, supposedly recounted efforts by North Africans to take young French women forcibly to North Africa in order to make them prostitutes. Such shocking narratives played a foundational role in the anti-trafficking campaigns at the time, as they had always done, right? I mean, this is always how anti-trafficking campaigns work. In this era, as Judy Walkowitz and others have shown, in this version, the bad guys were mainly North Africans or Arabs. In the 1976 study of Slavery, Sexual Torture, Love by Odette Philippon, who was one of Céleste's allies and worked with him in various organizations, both social Christian more broadly and abolitionist, relied on Arab examples for her description of three of the four methods that she claimed the traffickers used. So false marriage proposals, drugs, kidnapping. So these were all the things that Arabs did on which traffickers relied. And in 1979, Céleste himself would go on Dossier à l'écran to talk about prostitution, and this drew an enormous kind of mockery from the French left press, Libération, etc., because he laid out, he was like, never forget that in 1956 and 1957, it's in the Casbah that the pimps of Algeria received French money and founded the revolution. You know, so he kind of insisted, this really old fellow on the television screen, explaining once again. So it's what the usual, they often reference for this too, was Allez la pointe. You might have heard of him from the film Bataille d'Alger, but from the 1950s through the 1970s in French press more descriptions more widely, he was not a small-time criminal, he was a pimp, okay? Which could also help explain why he'd been attacking other pimps, not because he disagreed, but because they were competition, for those of you who've seen the film. To understand why Algerian Arab and North African men were so central to the public efforts to fight prostitution of social Catholics, it's necessary to examine, of course, why they fought prostitution. As abolitionist archives, and so the Jean Céleste Foundation has archives right next to Châtelet of all the different organizations that they founded, but also others like the Mouvement du Nid, Association du Nid. There's also a bunch of, in Marseille, for example, the Departmental Archives, the Mouvement du Nid, which broke from the complicated set of groups, also has a set of archives, which I was able to look at. But as their archives make clear, and many of their leaders stated publicly, prostitution, of course, was merely the tip of the iceberg. The real problem was French society. Secularism, ungodliness, paganism, and immorality. Abbé André-Marie Talvadas, who founded the Mouvement du Nid, an important French abolitionist movement that ministered to and counseled prostitutes, current and former, began a seminar he gave on the psychology of prostitutes in the early 1970s by explaining that it was first necessary to understand how in today's France, when the idea of God disappeared, so did the idea of man, capital M, of the human person, of his dignity, of the respect owed to women, of life, of the child, end quote. The exclusion of religion from the public sphere that has made human life meaningless, without value. In an era when such arguments were widely unpopular, didn't really resonate, didn't get much public traction. So we're talking about, 1962, a book comes out on the decline of French Catholicism. It's the period after that big upsurge in post-1946 in Catholic practitioners, as well as new connections between the church. Think of the 1959 law of public funding of private schools, i.e. Catholic schools. The late 1950s then, and then the early 1960s begins the significant decline in the French attendance at churches and in claims about French belief, particularly in Christianity. An era when such arguments were widely unpopular, and in the midst of a dramatic decline in Catholic, Christian, and religious practice and belief, social Catholic abolitionists targeted prostitution because people listened. They seem to have continually increased their focus on Arabs for the same reason. To talk about prostitution was to foreground a key metaphor for the erroneous path their society was on. In their depictions, this group of pitiful and yet, of course, exciting human beings and bodies seemingly reflected this tragedy. Because it was sex talk, it drew the attention of far more French people than their parallel efforts to talk about other problems. To blame it on North Africans grabbed the attention even more and kept it focused on what these Catholics saw as the emptiness and moral bankruptcy of what I would call post-decolonization France. Thanks a lot.